You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It's difficult to know whether to love or hate Anna Behnes, the protagonist of Jill Alexander Essbaum's novel Hausfrau. When the novel opens, Anna has already lived on the outskirts of Zurich for 9 years with her Swiss husband Bruno and their three young children, but she hasn't bothered to learn Schwizendutsch, the local language, to get a driver's license or to make any friends of her own. Anna draws our sympathy because she's vulnerable and lost, but it gets more difficult to root for her as the book goes on, as she becomes increasingly self-centered and engages in a series of reckless and torrid affairs with men she barely knows. Jill Alexander Essbaum is an award-winning poet whose work has appeared in The Best American Poetry and The Best American Erotic Poems, 1800 to the present. Her novel is published by Random House. I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm well. The book was described by one critic as Madame Bovary meets 50 Shades of Grey. Are you comfortable with that comparison?
You know, I am. It is very much like Madame Bovary. I think of it in many ways as an homage to Madame Bovary. That's the word I've decided upon. It's certainly not a retelling by any means.
Also Anna Karenina, I would think.
Well, there's a big nod to Anna Karenina, certainly with the name.
Calling Anna. And we're not going to go into all of the comparisons, but there are some.
Exactly.
But I can only assume that you'd be thrilled if the novel becomes a classic like Madame Bovary and sells half as well as 50 Shades of Grey.
Well, that's where I was going with that. Of course, yes.
So did you name your protagonist as a homage to Tolstoy's famous adulteress, Anna Karenina?
There was a nod to that in that direction. But you know how sometimes a character comes semi-formed or fully formed, and that was just her name. It just felt correct. It was plain. It was normal. It's not anything strange or complicated.
Well, your Anna shares certain things with Anna Karenina and Emma Bovary. They're both unfaithful to their rather boring husbands. But then there are major differences.
Yes.
Where the earlier women were looking for love, Anna Behnes' affairs are driven by something else, a kind of primal need or lust. She's not using sex to get intimacy. She and her lovers barely speak with each other sometimes.
That is true. You know, there's a couple places in the book, I believe, where the notion of addiction, maybe sex addiction, is brought out. And I certainly wouldn't say that that's what's going on here. However, she's, to a degree, using her affairs as a drug. She's sedating herself against her life. And that's something I've talked about in other places. Consciousness is a theme that runs through the novel, especially because one of the other overarching themes is Jungian psychoanalysis, and the goal of psychoanalysis is to come to consciousness. And if you sedate yourself through your life, if you keep your eyes closed, you're not going to be fully engaged in your life. And that's one of the ways I believe that she does this, through these affairs.
You mentioned Jungian psychoanalysis. Her husband is in Zurich studying Jungian psychoanalysis.
No. Was I moved to Zurich in 2006.
Oh, your husband was studying. I'm sorry, and you moved there because your husband was doing that?
Yes, my husband at the time. We're no longer married. We moved to Zurich in 2006 so that he could study Jungian psychoanalysis, because there's actually several psychoanalytic schools right there in Zurich.
And so Jung's the idea of the book, to some degree, came based on certain, we won't say all, autobiographical experiences?
Definitely not all. But what it did come out of, most definitely, was my own experience of alienation. Because if you've ever lived in a foreign country, and even if it is a beautiful foreign country, even if it is a first world country like Switzerland, you're not where you're from. You're out of your element. And especially if you don't speak the language, which I did not speak it very well at all. And Swiss German, Schweizerdeutsch, is hardly anything like regular German, and regular German's hard enough. You know, you have a hard time communicating. And, you know, my commerce is language, you know, as a writer. It was very difficult for me.
But it probably allowed you more time to write poetry.
There's only so many sonnets that can cover sadness.
Still, even though I'm sure that this is definitely a work of fiction. Do you sometimes have readers give you funny looks after they've read the book?
I do, and I remind them that it's fiction.
Now, Hausfrau is the German word for housewife, and in the United States it can have a pejorative connotation. Is that why you selected it for your title?
Yes. It also has a pejorative connotation in the German, because you almost hear just with it. I mean, even in housewife, you know, she's just a housewife. You don't have to say it. And it's too bad, because it doesn't need to be there. There's in the world of the 21st century, when women ostensibly have all these choices that we can make, if it really is a feminist society, one of the choices we should be able to make is to be a housewife.
Often when I speak to somebody who's just published a first novel, we talk about the previous collections of short stories. In this case, you're the author of four published collections of poetry. And that usually is even a more difficult transition to make. Do you have a prose brain as opposed to a poetic brain?
That's a really interesting question. You know, the process is the same. You put one word down and then the next word and the next word, and you step back and you see if you've put them down in the right order.
But there's more ambiguity in poetry usually.
I don't know if that's true or not. Certainly the kind of poems that I write are a lot more structured. And this book actually, in some ways, resembles the structure of this novel resembles the structure of a poem. It takes many cues from the way that I've structured a lot of my poems. There's sections that could be, you know, comparable to some sort of stanza or whatnot. And, you know, whenever I would get stuck, which was quite often, because I didn't really know what I was doing, which is probably the way to start these things to begin with, I would fall back on the things that I did when I was writing poetry, which was, why don't I write the next section in iambic pentameter and see, or iambic, and see what would happen. So you may find whole sections in here that were written in iambic meter.
But we would have to be aware to notice it. A writer once told me that whenever he ran into difficulties describing something, you know, a landscape or whatever, he just would write it out as a poem first, and then it maybe changed a word or two, and it became prose.
That's really smart. When I'm teaching my students, I tell them, you know, if you're hitting a wall, you have to find a way around it. You know, you can't just keep going straight through it. So for me, it was try and find a trick, try and find a door, you know, try and corset the language somehow that I can fit through this difficulty.
My guest is Jill Alexander Essbaum, her book Hausfrau. Anna is a narcissistic character. It's not easy to like. Isn't it sometimes difficult to sell a book about an unlikable woman? Claire Massoud talked on the show about that when she discussed her novel, The Woman Upstairs, about another difficult female protagonist.
You know, it never occurred to me that people were going to find this woman unlikable. Now, mind you, I've been...
liked her?
That never came up. I've been living with this character for a while, you know, as I wrote her. I don't necessarily need the people I read about to be likable. I need my friends to be likable. I need them to be reliable. I need them to be people I can count on. But when I open up a book, that's not necessarily what I'm looking for. Now, this character, she doesn't need to be liked, certainly not by me. She needs love. And the least likable people are the ones who typically need the most love. And I think maybe at the base of this story, that might be, you know, a moral.
Well, some people will understand completely what you're trying to do, and other people will be turned off by the fact that they have to connect in some way to the protagonist. You've told the story in third person, but from Anna's perspective. Did you know from the beginning that you were going to structure it that way?
Oh, absolutely not. When I first started writing it, it began as a first person narrative and also in present tense. And I would get about 100 pages in, and then I would get stuck. I'd hit this wall. And then I'd start back at the beginning, and I'd do the same thing, and I'd get stuck again until one day I was driving, and I had this revelation that I had to change it because it wasn't my story. And it had already happened in some place in the universe that was prose. It had already happened, so I changed it, and then I was able to write it.
It opens with a memorable first sentence. Anna was a good wife, mostly. Was that there from the start? Because some writers have told me that they really can't get going until they get that first sentence.
I would love to say that that was always the first sentence. But, you know, there was a whole other chapter in front of that for a very long time, and I could never get it right. Until I finally realized it's because it didn't belong there.
You're kind of telling the reader with that sentence that Anna is not always to be trusted and that Anna doesn't see her bad behavior as all that serious.
You know, that I think that falls in line with the idea of consciousness. She doesn't see it because her eyes are closed. You know, I keep going back to that metaphor, but it's so true. I believe that some people have considered this book, or I'm not going to say accused me because that sounds so aggressive, but they've suggested that this book is a morality tale, and I don't think it is. I think it's a tale of consciousness. I think it's a tale of what happens when you don't remain fully engaged in your life. And this is a woman who does not live her life with her eyes open and her senses very engaged in what she's doing. She's not paying attention.
Well, she goes into analysis and lies to her shrink.
Yeah, that's not generally how it's done.
That kind of dooms the whole analysis process from the start. The doctor, Dr. Meserle, recommends that Anna study German, so she attends language school while her mother-in-law, Ursula, is babysitting her children. And that's where she meets Archie, this Scotsman, and has an affair with him. Later, she has an affair with a man named Carl. I'm not going to reveal some of the more complicated details about these affairs. But these are not, you say, the kind of self-medicating?
Well, you have to understand, we're getting... The book takes place over 3 months, right? And we're getting 3 months out of something that's been building for 9 years. And so she's been living in Switzerland for 9 years. And for 9 years, she's not been able to speak the language. And for 9 years, she's been living with her husband, who is, I'm not going to call him oppressive, but he's a little oppressive.
And well, he's a difficult person.
He's a difficult person, and he likes things in a certain order, and he likes things done in a certain way. And she butts against that with her own sensibilities. And this is not something that's just happened. Like, oh, let me take this pill of having these affairs. This is not an easy self-medication. And I think maybe at some point that metaphor falls flat, but we're seeing what happens at the after 9 years of this.
I don't want to give too much away because the book is really suspenseful, but it's hard to imagine things ending happily for Anna.
Yes, that is true.
So what are you working on now? Are you going back to poetry, or have you gotten the novel writing bug?
Well, I like to tell my students that all writing ultimately is the same writing. However, I'm working on finishing a collection of poems right now, and I am in the baby beginning stages of perhaps, maybe, potentially, I'm hedging here, starting a new novel.
At one point, it was pretty much the same thing. When Homer writes this long epic poem, he's really writing the equivalent of a novel, isn't he?
He's telling a story. You know, we're all telling a story, and there are many ways to tell a story. If I'm describing something, I'm telling the story of the thing that I'm looking at.
Jill Alexander Esbaum is the author of several collections of poetry, and her work has appeared in many important collections. Now she's written a novel that's gotten wonderful reviews and has become something of a bestseller. It's called Hausfrau, and it is published by Random House. And I thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.